Your boredom is over because we're just getting started here on Most Shows Recap here on Post Show Recap. And it's our Halloween extravaganza. I'm Rob Sestrino. Welcome, Josh Wigler and Antonio Mazzaro.
What's going on? Happy Halloween. Happy Devil's Night.
Look at you, Josh. Look at the Josh is in costume, everyone. For those of you listening, you'll have to check the archive.
I promised. You guys, I don't remember when we struck this, but someone on here said something about Halloween, and I said I would be dressed up for Halloween. So I'm a crappy version of the dude. I've got something white, vaguely white Russian-ish. I've got a bathrobe on. I've got sunglasses. I'm like the crappy Wiggler dude. That's what you get.
Little chocolate milk and sunglasses goes a long way.
Yeah, it's like coffee milk. So it's mostly milk, but a tiny bit of coffee. And I won't say how much booze.
Antonio, are you going to be dressing up for Halloween?
Probably not. I have a Fidel Castro costume, if you can even imagine it, that I keep on standby. But I'm not my plan this year. We'll see if it happens. So how about you, Rob?
Yeah. I'm going to be potentially a suicidal Mets fan by the end of the night. We'll see.
No.
We'll see. That might be what's in the works. Anyway, so good to be here with you guys on Halloween Eve. Today, we're going to be talking about some of our either favorite or underrated Halloween sitcom episodes. And we've got a bunch of stuff. Hopefully, many, many treats for you guys. Not too many tricks here on our Halloween edition of Most Shows Recapped here on Post Show Recaps.
Yeah. If we were supposed to bring tricks, I didn't do my homework. Only treats. Yeah,
felony or treat is my favorite. So that's
felony or treat. How does that work? What's the game? I mean, I guess I can figure it out.
So if you don't get candy, sometimes you get a bad trick in return. As Larry David found out, I think
you get toilet paper all over your yard.
Yeah. It's suggested that you just give the candy. You just give the treat.
What is the cutoff though? How old is too old for?
Well, let's save it. Let's save it. We'll get into it we talk about our episode. So each of us have two episodes of Halloween TV that we suggested to the group. We tried to watch as much of it as we can so we can discuss it here with you guys. Of course, we're live here today on blab.im. We're going to be taking your questions too along the way. You can post your questions with the /Q, and then we can do some cool stuff with answering your questions here along the way with some new features that are here on Blab. So very excited to get into this with you guys.
All right, let's do it.
All right. So how should this work? Antonio, what are the rules?
I'm not the biggest fan of rules, but I'd say that Josh should start and tell us what he likes about TV on Halloween in general, and segue that into his first pick, which is a pretty great It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia episode.
Well, when we started talking about ideas of what to do for a Halloween episode here on Most Shows Recapped, we all talked about, okay, well, let's throw out two of our favorite Halloween episodes and we'll talk about them. So we'll get six episodes in total. And I started, I think one of the first ones I suggested was an American Horror Story episode. It was the two-part Halloween episode from season one of American Horror Story, Murder House, which is one of the scariest episodes of anything I have ever seen. If you haven't checked it out, go seek it out. If you are weak-stomached, if you're not good with horror, don't seek it out. It's got one of the most scary opening scenes that I've ever seen in anything. So that's what I threw out. And then you guys started throwing out really funny stuff. And I decided, oh well, maybe I should roll it back on American Horror Story and toss in some funny things as well. What I like, I think that there's a great tradition of Halloween episodes on TV across comedies, across sitcoms, on cartoons. Obviously, we're not getting into it here really. The Simpsons Treehouses of Horror, those are incredible, incredible episodes every single year that Simpsons does. I think Antonio said in the comment section on post-show recaps that there's too many to even do justice to one. So I wanted to draw on two ends of who I am now versus who I was once upon a time. So the guy I am now selected who got Dee pregnant from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, which is from season six. It's episode seven. It's the guys at the bar. If you don't know Always Sunny, it's basically about the worst people on the planet who run and operate a bar. None of them are redeemable. They're all terrible people. They just get drunk and get into shenanigans and do awful things all day long. And this episode is a flashback to a Halloween party in their bar several, several months earlier. Now that they are finally realizing that one of the closest people in their life has been pregnant for quite a while, and she's accusing one of them of being the father. So it's a little bit of a whodunit at a Halloween party set several months earlier, and ridiculousness.
That's I can't believe you call it a whodunit. That's considering that there's a sexual element. That's an interesting mystery there, Josh.
It's literally a whodunit. Whodunner.
Yeah. but yeah, what's crazy about that is that it didn't. We watched six different episodes, and we'll talk about them all. Some of them, Halloween is central to what's going on. Like it has to be Halloween for the episode to make sense. This is an episode where the key element was the fact that they were all in costume.
Yes.
Because the fact that certain people were in costume could be mistaken for other people, and it was a very sort of Shakespearean kind of thing, actually, that was going on there with the mistaken identities and the people in costume. So it didn't have to be Halloween, but I think that the Halloween aspect did definitely make it really, really funny. And there's some great jokes in this episode about, like, Charlie's Halloween costume, for example. He says he wants to be a sexy vampire. Everybody's talking about vampires. He's the Phantom of the Opera. Except for Charlie.
They're so dumb. Everybody on the show is so dumb. And, you know, you have Frank, who everyone is saying is Spider-Man, but he's saying he's Man-Spider. And you get all these shifting perspectives. And Halloween was so long before the present day of the episode that no one has a clear memory of it to begin with. But they were all drunk the night that it happened. So everybody's take on the story is completely wildly different. And it's just spectacular. And just the misinterpretations of other people's costumes, like Sweet D says that she's a sexy angel. Everyone else says she's a giant bird. It's good. It's really good. Yeah. Sweet D's the best. Any Sweet D heavy episodes of Always Sunny are going to be thumbs up for me.
I always like the device of the Rashomon story of that everybody was very drunk and nobody can really remember what happened. And it's always fun when you do the retelling from everybody's different perspective of how each person saw the events of the night. So I did really like that. And each person sort of like props up themselves in their version of the story, which was also very, very fun. Did they continue on with this storyline? And I watched like the first two seasons of It's Always Sunny, but didn't keep up with it. Was Dee actually pregnant? Did she actually end up having that storyline?
Yeah, 100%. Caitlin Olsen was pregnant in real life. She's married to Rob McElhenney, who plays Mac on the show. So that is his baby in the oven. She was very much pregnant in real life. They hadn't really addressed it on the show up until this episode. This is seven episodes into season six. I believe she has the baby in the finale, and it's a total non-event. I think she has the baby, and then the baby is just like gone. She just completely distanced herself from the baby, and the baby never comes back into the picture.
They do a second Who is the Father episode at the end of this season, right? And they run through kind of all of her previous ex-boyfriends, including some I think that you didn't realize that Dee had a relationship with. Some great cameos from people that were on previous episodes of It's Always Sunny, and I think that whoever the baby's father is ends up taking custody of the baby, if I'm not mistaken, and that's the way of just getting it off the show. But yeah, it's funny because at the beginning of this episode, Caitlin Olsen does have a little bit of a baby bump in her costume, even. And they're saying, well, you're eating all the time. I just can't believe how much weight you're gaining. So they have to sort of explain it. And what's really interesting about that is that Rob McElhenney, the husband, Rob Mac, he actually gained a lot of weight for an It's Always Sunny season later on.
Yeah, the very next season was Fat Mac.
Just packed it on as Fat Mac. And it was just,
it's mass. About it in the
story. It's so mass, funny. Cultivating Mac. Yes. So Sonny's very funny for doing stuff like that. This is an episode of the show that clearly some knowledge of the show makes it funnier. We get some great McPoyle appearances here. My favorite recurring It's Always Sunny characters show up here. And just our classically weird drinking milk, wearing robes, just like Josh. And just being so weird.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't flush the vomit. Keep it up. Yeah.
It took me like 10 minutes to be staring at one of the McPoyle guys and like, where do I know that guy from?
Oh,
like,
come on.
And then I realized, no.
That's right. Season two of 24. He was one of the guys that Jack Bauer infiltrated his terrorist sleeper cell.
No.
He's no?
No. He's one of the really fun characters on House of Cards.
Oh, right.
With the guinea pig.
He's a great pet owner. He's a great pet owner, that McPoyle.
Yeah.
Jimmy Simpson, I believe, is that actor's name. He's great wherever he turns up, even though he spells his name J-I-M-M-I, I think. Which is probably another guy in the SAG or AFTRA or whatever that had Jimmy Simpson already. So he decided to play it cool. Yeah,
it
I
makes
love
him very Googleable, easily Googleable.
It's true. He's a Googleable guy. He's a good guy to kind of put in your piece to have. He's got great eyes. He's just kind of pops off the screen as a weird dude as soon as you see him. And
yeah,
the McPoyles are so great, and they're really funny here. You get the McPoyle sister too with Mac licking her lips. Mm-hmm. Whose flashback is it, by the way, or story where Sweet D is just a legitimate ostrich? Is
That's
it the
Mac? Yeah, it's Mac.
Mac.
It's so funny.
Yeah, Mac might be the dumbest of them all. It's hard to say. They're all so dumb. It's so good. I don't know. I love that show very much. I hear what you're saying. I do think that if you know the characters, it makes it a lot funnier. If you know the histories, if you know the McPoyles, if you know what to expect from those guys. But I think Always Sunny is a fairly evergreen show where I do think that you can hop in and out. And most of the time, if it's your style of comedy, you're going to get something really good out of it. So I haven't watched every single episode of the show. I don't watch it. I don't think I ever watched it in a straight line. I never watched it episode by episode. And I feel like I know enough about the show to laugh at any time that those guys are on screen.
Yeah.
Rob, what do you think of the It's Always Sunny and Seinfeld comparisons? Do you think it's kind of, people have said it's like the Seinfeld on crack was how it was early described.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely could see it. I mean, you have sort of like the three unredeemable male characters and the one female character. So, I mean, I definitely could see that sort of comparison in terms of like these just like horrible characters. And It's Always Sunny pushes the envelope a lot further than Seinfeld does, where especially Seinfeld starts in a place of sort of just like getting into like the day-to-day minutiae of things, whereas I don't think It's Always Sunny ever started in a place that was not as broad.
Right. Well, does anybody else have anything else to say about It's Always Sunny? Because we could transition right into Curb with that.
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay. So this episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm was from season 2, episode 3. And I think that Antonio might have suggested it. And I said, okay, let me jump on that. And it's a really, really fun episode. I think that it's not necessarily a super Halloween theme, but does have some Halloween elements in it. And it really takes place in an episode where there are trick-or-treaters that come to Larry David's house. And this was actually fun to go back and watch. I hadn't watched much old Curb before, and it does feel a bit dated. I think this episode is from 2001, and so it's where Larry is having some people come to the house, or trick-or-treaters come to the house, and there are some young women that come, and he asks them what their costume is. They don't really have a good answer for him. He decides to spite them and not give them any candy, and they toilet paper and deface his house, and then graffiti his front door with the world's bald a-hole.
It's not great.
Yeah. And only if you're part of that community would you really be so offended.
Yeah. And there's a whole other storyline about a guy with a Cobb salad who's in a wheelchair, and I feel like that storyline I felt like was so-so at best. It really was not particularly memorable, but the stuff about with Larry and the trick-or-treaters really stuck with me like after all these years, and I was just dying in those scenes where the girls come to the house and they don't have a costume on. And, you know, I don't know if they got better with this as Curb Your Enthusiasm went on. There's so much people talking over each other in these scenes. Like, I think they clean that up a bit as they move forward in Curb Your Enthusiasm. But it's just like, there's just like a couple, like for a minute at a time, just characters just like shouting over each other scenes.
It's Bob Cobb! He invented the Cobb salad!
Don't even bring that up. Don't even bring it up.
But it's so funny when the girls come to his house and then he's like, oh, what is this costume? And they're like, just give us candy. And he's like, no. How old are you? Aren't you a little bit old to be out here? And he spites them. And then the next day when the police come to the house, he calls the police to report on this. He says it's a hate crime because it was a crime against the bald community. And he was offensive that they said, he said, if this didn't say bald, if it said gay, wouldn't it be a hate crime? And that the police officer, who is like, you know, a good looking guy with like a shaved head, says, look, well, I'm bald and I'm not offended by this. And Larry tells him that, well, you shave your head for fashion. You're not considered part of the bald community.
All due respect.
The look you're cultivating.
Yeah.
And then when they're sort of like trying to say to him, like, well, that's really a social contract. trick or treat, and you know, we really suggest that you give the candy. We really do suggest that. Otherwise, it's a trick or treat, then you get the trick from the kids.
Barry's great because he's, it's not, I didn't know it was going to be felony or treat. You know, he's just really upset about the level, the lengths to which people have gone. And he describes one of the girls as having an Elvira look, and then the cops are like, well, that sounds like maybe she had a little bit of a costume going on.
No,
then,
just
maybe
describing a look.
Yeah, it sounds like maybe she's got a costume. So you probably just give him, and Cheryl, of course, classic Cheryl, just is like, Larry, why didn't you give him the candy? Like, what is wrong with you? Mm-hmm. And I think in this scene, she really sort of espouses the central kind of character element of Larry David. She says something like, I don't know what it is about you, Larry. You have all these little things that you fight over and nobody else even notices. Nobody cares, but you just get so hung up on these things. And I'm like, that has been worth 8 seasons of television right there.
Yeah.
That whole little thing about Larry David that Cheryl says in their driveway about the trick or treat. So it's really good there as well.
I also love the way that it comes around where then there's a guy who gets on him, and I forget who the composer was. Was it
Wagner
that he was whistling, and then this guy called Larry out and said he was a bad Jewish person because he was singing. Oh, he was
Are
whistling
you Jewish?
Wagner. Yeah.
What, you want me to show you my penis?
Yeah. Oh, God.
And then, Larry David.
So
6 to midnight on that. Yeah.
Larry ends up finding Elvira at her house and really calls her out. And then she's basically is like saying, no, I didn't do that. And then it turns out that it's that guy's daughter. And then he gets into a great confrontation with and the guy is completely taking his daughter's side and saying that no way my daughter did this. And then she is like not even like trying to hide the fact that she did it, and it's like being like so blatant about it. It's really, really funny.
Yeah. Well, and then it comes comes full circle when Larry has the reason Larry was whistling Wagner is he was describing to Cheryl this incident where I think Wagner was involved with somebody hired this orchestra to play for this beautiful princess. And every morning when she woke up, she heard an orchestra playing. So Larry kind of calls an audible and gets that set up for Cheryl's birthday. So he has the orchestra just on hire because they've played in his house. And he decides to get revenge on this guy by having the orchestra play on his lawn right in his face in the middle of the night. So very classic Larry David social assassin move.
I'm the one who named you a social assassin.
Yeah,
I like this episode a lot because it's barely a Halloween episode. And it's so perfectly how someone like Larry David would mark Halloween. You only mark Halloween by the passage of like the annoying trick or treat aspect.
Mm-hmm.
People coming to your home and violating your privacy and violating your space and getting you into trouble, having to call the cops the next day. None of the benefits of Halloween anymore when you're Larry David. I don't know. Maybe I'm a grump. I feel more connected to that these days than even I may have, you know, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, I would have been really into the Always Sunny thing. I feel myself more in the Larry David end of things.
Is there an age cutoff for you, Josh, if somebody comes to your door, no costume on and they're like 16,
17? No one's coming to my door in Brooklyn. If you can find me,
yeah,
get at it.
That's the thing where it's like, this is the first year where I'm not in an apartment and I am like not really looking forward to this tomorrow with the bell ringing all day and not in the good way.
You love ringing the bell. Yeah. I love ringing.
Not in the good way. I got to get up again. Oh my God. So I don't know. I might just put the bowl outside.
Can you rig your doorbell to make the noise of the podcast bell?
I don't know.
How about the alternate universe bell?
I don't think we can rig it to make any sound. We can barely get it to make a doorbell sound. It's kind of busted.
Yeah. I live out in the middle of the country. If somebody comes to my door for trick or treat, I'm going to be terrified.
Oh, wow. I no one think knocks that at my door ever. In the middle of the country, I think you'd be more friendly towards everybody.
Yeah, I would be, but no one ever knocks on my door. So it's going to be a little bit scary when someone's knocking on my door, even if it's, you know, a trick or treat day. No one's ever done that. I've lived in this house for about 10 years.
Wow. Well, you guys know what to do.
Get at me. You can have like some nasty pineapple lifesaver that I have that I won't eat.
Yeah, if you find me, I'll give you a high five. That's all I got. I got nothing else on standby.
Not a take five?
No pennies?
No take fives. Those are for me.
All right. Antonio, what was your first pick this week?
Well, it's funny because Josh is talking about towing the line between being kind of an It's Always Sunny guy and then maybe turning into a curb guy in terms of the way they view the holiday. My first pick, I think, is from a nostalgia standpoint, even though it's a more recent show, I think it really captures what Halloween felt like to me when I was a kid, and that's Bob's Burgers from the third season of Bob's Burgers. The second episode is called Full Bars, and it does not refer to cell phone service, which is what I would normally say these days, or cell phone battery. It refers to full candy bars, which is like the holy grail of trick-or-treating. Were you guys ever getting full bars when you were out trick-or-treating?
Never.
Instead of the fun size?
Yeah, instead of the fun size.
Very rarely. And it really was the holy grail if you could get that. That means you were going to someone who's like doing really well in life. If they could shell out to get the full bars, they're really crushing it.
Yeah. And were you guys, I know you guys both grew up on Long Island. Did you guys go to nicer neighborhoods to trick or treat, or did you stay within your zone?
I went to wherever the candy was, wherever the people were. I got some good stuff. I got the occasional full bar. It was good.
Wow. Yeah. I just went wherever they took us. I mean, my parents were not driving me to some other neighborhood to go where the good candy was.
I would sneak over into the gated communities. That's what I would do.
Really?
Did you really?
No, I would never do that.
Oh.
Does it look like I'm sneaking over any gates? Come on. This has really been it forever. I mean,
I don't know. You know,
there was no time when I was a younger lad where I was pole vaulting over anything.
You could have snuck under some gates.
No. I've never been spry. Not spry enough.
My parents would drive me and my brother to the nice neighborhood. We grew up in the country, and around here it was trailer parks and not much else. And so they would take us to the nice, you know, suburban, super nice suburban McMansion type neighborhoods. And yeah, it was a different world. And because of that, our eyes were super open. And this episode resonated better with me. If you're not familiar with Bob's Burgers, it's a great animated show on Fox on Sunday nights as part of their animation kind of block. But it's a little different in style than even The Simpsons, or especially from Family Guy. It is a father and a mother, real working class. They have a diner, thus the aforementioned burgers. And they have three crazy zany kids who are always up to some kind of hijinks. That the show is really funny, centered around these kids. And these kids, in this case, are going trick-or-treating by themselves for the first time ever. And they go to the rich neighborhood because they really want to get the good candy. But then they have to just deal with a whole bunch of stuff that's going on in that rich neighborhood. I don't know. Are you guys big fans of this show? I'm curious.
I don't watch it regularly. It's one of those shows where anytime it's on, I will watch it. I will sit down and I will laugh my ass off. But pretty much with any comedy, it's not appointment television for me. But I've seen my share of Bob's Burgers, and it's a very, very funny show. And Tina Belcher is the best.
Yes. Yeah, I have not seen a lot of Bob's Burgers, so this was a bit of a new experience for me to come in and watch Bob's Burgers. I actually, more so than the full bars story, I actually preferred the other storyline that was going on with the who killed the cat or the guinea pig story, going back to House of Cards.
Yeah, that's actually really Bob and Lynn go to an adult Halloween party with their crazy customer, Teddy. And Teddy has his guinea pig there that gets smashed. And then it's sort of a whodunit, if you will. And that gets pretty funny.
A whodunner? For sure.
Yes, it's a whodunner.
What I really liked is that Bob didn't want to wear a Halloween costume at the Halloween party. And the guys whose party he goes to has all the extra costumes in the closet and is offering him different Halloween costumes. He ends up getting like a fat suit, but he tries to offer him a summer Frankenstein.
Summer Frankenstein, Bobby. It'll be great.
That's not a costume.
I have to admit, I almost came here dressed as a bunny. That was almost my costume today.
With just a cotton tail, just a piece of cotton on your butt.
I'm a butt.
Yeah, so that's really pretty funny. Rob, I know you and Nicole have gone as Mario and Princess Peach and other things. Mm-hmm. Are you the costume driver in that twosome, or is Nicole more the costume fan?
That I am the person that I don't want to wear a costume. I don't want to go anywhere. I mean, there's no upside for me to go out for Halloween because I'm driving. So it's not even like, okay, well, you can go out and get drunk. I got to drive the car. I'm married. There's no great scenario where I'm getting going out of the house to get anything good going on for Halloween.
What if you could go as Summer Frankenstein, though, Rob?
Summer Frankenstein.
Totally might be,
again, I don't want to wear face paint. I don't want to do anything. If it's a mask, I could live with that a little bit more. But then you can't even drink. I'm back more into Halloween this year because it's fun, like to have a kid, and then the kid is like really excited about that. So it's fun to see the kids excited. But in terms of me being excited for Halloween, I'm afraid that I'm out on it.
Yeah, and that's pretty much where I'm at with it. And not having any children yet, I think that's probably where I'll stay until that changes. But I had a feeling that's why you sort of were in line with Bob, not wanting to wear the costume when they get to the party. And meanwhile, Lynn is all about it.
You almost sat on Reyes the ferret once.
Yeah, almost. We were not that lucky.
Yeah, I love that Teddy storyline on this wraps up once they've buried the guinea pig. He says, no, I can get a ferret. You know, like he's all about it. So, of
it's
course,
a ferret.
He wanted a ferret all along.
Yeah. But I
really love the nostalgia of Bob's Burgers. To me, that really, that part of the episode is really key for me.
Yeah, I love the, I mean, rather than like the quest for full bars or anything, or like targeting neighborhoods because that was going to have the good candy, I do remember very vividly knowing that there were certain domains of neighborhoods where you don't want to go because the high schoolers were going to be there. Like that's where the seniors were going to be. And you could really get your shit knocked in if you went to those neighborhoods.
Pee balloons.
It never happened to me. I never got the pee balloons. I never got pranked. I never got anything like that happen to me, but it's because I never took the chance. I knew where the neighborhoods were and I stayed the hell away.
You know, can I tell a story real quick of that recently, like within like probably like, I guess this is probably Halloween. It's not that recent. Halloween 2004, but not like I wasn't a kid or anything. And it was like the first year that I moved to Los Angeles, and it must have been within a week or so of being here. Like I was like walking on Hollywood Boulevard or Sunset Boulevard, or like one of like those a main thoroughfare, and I just got egged by like a car, like slowed down. It was like a drive by, and I got egged, and like I hit like the egg like hit me like in the throat. And I was like, I just could not breathe. It was like, it's like a drive-by egging. And I'm like minding my own business. I'm just like a random person on the sidewalk. And I'm like, I couldn't breathe.
That's assault, brother.
And the person who I was with, who happened to be Johnny Fairplay, was like dying. That was the funniest thing that he ever saw in his entire life. But it was I totally like blocked this out, but for whatever reason, I remembered it recently. Wow. Like that was such a terrible thing to have happened to me. I don't know what I did to incur that. I was not like some kid walking around. I was like a grown adult.
Yeah.
You gotta be careful on Helen Hunt or Hell Hunt or whatever it's called.
Yeah.
I have a drive by egging story. I was
you the egger or the eggy?
It was, give me a minute. I was walking back. I was in college. It was my senior year at Syracuse University. And I was walking back from my girlfriend was now my wife. Had performed at a Halloween orchestra event at the big music school. And as we were walking back, it was Halloween night, and a car turns onto the street that we are on, and we both look, and someone half hangs out the window and holds an egg out. And so I see what's happening, and I duck. And as soon as I duck, the egg makes impact with my future wife's arm.
And she already is sensitive to egg-related issues.
And my wife, if you don't know, is allergic to eggs. And it was a to-do.
You didn't take the bullet.
No, I didn't take the bullet. I mean, ultimately, happy ending, and she survived the night. But those drive-by eggings are dangerous. You got to be really careful with that stuff.
You know, and I can't still am victims to drive-by eggings on Twitter. All the egg people are always constantly. Those are the people that are always hitting me.
You got to be careful for those eggs on Twitter. They really will get you, and they're not even hard boiled. They're just straight up. Josh, I can't believe that story.
It's true. It's true.
I mean, I believe that it's true. It's just, oh my gosh, what a valiant knight you are.
It's so great too. It's very classic Craven Wiggler of like, oh, I see the thing. Duck, honey. No, I just ducked.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, and you got hit with the end.
We know how I am under pressure. That's the answer. That was the very honest answer.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay.
And I'm glad it didn't break me up like Corey and Topanga.
Oh, no.
We're broken up in my second episode that I picked for this, which was, and then there was Sean, which is an episode of Boy Meets World that I only today, after having made you guys watch this episode, discovered that it's actually not a legitimate Halloween episode. It's just the horror movie episode of Boy Meets World. It aired in February, I think, of 1997. So I'm already a failure in that regard. But this is an episode that this is like on the other end. If Always Sunny for me is the cynical Halloween that I enjoy these days, then there was Sean is just like a goofy, nostalgic thing. I can't imagine that either of you two were big Boy Meets World people back in the day.
No,
this is the first time I've ever watched Boy Meets World.
Right. And Rob, I can't see it.
I'm sure I had seen it at the time, but it was probably like by 1997, I was in college and was not following the Boy Meets World, believe it or not.
No, I was meeting the world at that point. Yeah,
but Antonio is a big fan of Girl Meets World, which is why I'm surprised that he hasn't been back and checked out the Boy Meets World.
Sometimes you can like the secondary material and not like the primary source.
I do have to say, I really did enjoy this episode of Boy Meets World. I thought it was very cute.
Yeah, it's good. I mean, it's obviously not every episode of Boy Meets World includes characters getting murdered by a serial killer that just so happens to be one of the people in the room. But it's a really funny episode, and it brings me back to being in like junior high, or not quite junior high. It would be on TGIF. It'd be on Friday nights. I would go over to friends' houses, and it would be like, that was around the time where boyfriends and girlfriends were starting to intermingle. So we would all get together and watch Boy Meets World. And I'll always remember this episode because it has that really catchy theme song that's running throughout it. It has this very strange conceit. It has Jennifer Love Pfefferman, who is a fantastic character, who was dating Will Friedle at the time, which is why she was on the show. I think it's a very funny, little cute, clever play with the horror genre. I don't have much to add on it other than I just have a special place in my heart for that episode. And I know a lot of people who do love Boy Meets World are big fans of that episode. It's a standout for sure.
Yeah, I was actually quite surprised with the poignancy of the episode, which actually was taken aback by the how it ends up, you know, with the killer storyline and where that's actually coming from and the kind of point that the show's making. I just never realized that the show had any real level of emotional depth to it. I thought it was just kind of a sitcom, whatever. But this is kind of an interesting story, especially from the perspective of a best friend when two other friends are breaking up at that age. How will you take it? How will you respond consciously and subconsciously? I actually thought that was really good.
Yeah.
No, it's a very kind-hearted show, Boy Meets.
But I was a little surprised with like the people being murdered on this show. Like I thought that was a little dark for like, I couldn't imagine an episode of Full House where people are being like, murdered in that way and sort of like blood on the chalkboard.
Like if Michelle Tanner had wound up with a pencil in her forehead.
Right. Pencil in the forehead and like a knife in the back and stuff like that. And then also like in terms of like, well, they're talking about the rules. I guess it's like, a post-Scream world where they're doing Scream jokes and they're talking about like, well, the virgins always die first, and Corey's like, well, a good thing Topanga took care of that for me. Like, I was really a little surprised, a little taken aback.
I think Boy Meets World is interesting because when the show started, this episode is in season 5, and when the show started, Corey Matthews was a young lad. He was, I don't even remember what grade he's in. I feel like it's 6th grade or something like that. And so that's basically how old they assume the audience is when the show is starting out. And the people who are starting out with Boy Meets World are growing up with the character. And these start to become the kinds of things that you talk about in your home. And I feel like it did do a good job of tracking how you grew with the characters on screen, with Ben Savage no longer just being this Stinkysaurus little kid. Instead, he's this Stinkysaurus adolescent. So I think that the show did a good job of matching its audience in that way. And I think that's why a bunch of people who are, in their mid to late 20s, early 30s, who had Boy Meets World in their childhood were kind of like a little bit floored that Girl Meets World was a thing that happened. I haven't taken the plunge. I haven't watched an episode of the show before, but there's always a little bit of temptation. I always do kind of want to check it out. So for a certain group, Boy Meets World really, really landed. And this episode in particular was a lot of fun. And I just love the whole, I love Jennifer Love Pfefferman. That's just such a great, great little thing. And the whole like, oh, I love that horror movie with the chick from Party of Five, and not even talking about, what was it? I Know What You Did Last Summer. So it was good.
Well, had she made that yet?
Yeah, she had.
Okay.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
So, but had the breakup on this show, on Boy Meets World, just like recently occurred before this episode?
Yes. Yeah.
And was the audience just like totally distraught and floored by it? Is the Sean kind of the friend kind of the stand-in for the audience here, like their reactions and softening the blow and all that stuff?
Yeah, absolutely. Corey and Topanga forever. You know, they're like one of the epic star-crossed romances of our time, Antonio. People love Corey and Topanga to the point that they got engaged at the end of high school. So that was pushing it probably a little bit. That was like everyone from Beverly Hills 90210 going to the same college. That was their answer to that. But people were distraught. People were very upset. And really, the breakup storyline was very, very dramatic because it was kind of a cheating scandal, sort of.
Almost
a cheating scandal. Corey was like flirting with the idea of maybe he was interested in somebody else, and he admits this to Topanga. And
that's Topanga's very like, political. Flirting. I was flirting with the idea.
He was flirting with the idea. Yeah. He went on a ski trip. He liked this ski instructor. The ski instructor clearly liked him. Corey admits as much to Topanga. Topanga says, "Look, Corey, you got to figure this out. You got to find yourself. You got to know what you want to do. Go see what's going on." And Corey's like, "All right, well, let me check this out." And then he goes off with the ski instructor and they're talking, and he decides, you know, "I really do love Topanga. So I'm going to go back to Topanga and tell her she's the one." And he goes and he tells her everything. And Topanga says, "I'm breaking up with you. You shouldn't have even had to have the question. You should have just known." And Corey's devastated, and we're all devastated, and it's very sad. But they get back together, and then they get married, and then Girl Meets World happens, so it's a happy ending.
Happy ending.
That's what happened.
They did.
Happy-ish.
Yeah.
Why is it only happy-ish?
Well, because then, I don't know, we're going to have Girl Meets World, and then what's next? Like,
it's happy-ish in, like, the human condition that all things must end, and then, yes. So eventually, like, they'll die, and it will be an unhappy ending. Yeah, one
day. It's Halloween, Rob. We have to go dark.
Yeah, eventually. Eventually, they will all get, the killer will come for them in the end.
Yes. We'll have a zombie-ish episode called Corpse Meets World.
Oh, great.
All right. Well, my second pick, ultimately, is another zombie-related episode. And this is really prior to, Josh and I covering The Walking Dead. But I guess The Walking Dead had already premiered at this time. And this is, I want to make sure I'm pronouncing this episode correctly, Epidemiology. Did I have that right, Antonio?
Is it Epidemiology?
Probably. I don't,
like epidemiology.
Okay, Epidemiology from Community Season 2. And Antonio, I know you're probably the biggest Community guy here on the panel. Fair or unfair?
I'd say fair.
And so this is an episode but I used to really love Community. I was really like, I got really into it after the first season. And boom, like I was in on the ground floor or a second floor. And I was all ready to go. And I felt like, you know, this was really just, in my wheelhouse in terms of like when Community, I felt like, was in its highest highs.
Yeah. And Community is known for its pop culture parodies. And, you know, of course, they're famous for their paintball episode where it's sort of a takeoff on action movies and it's a takeoff on Westerns.
That's the one with Sawyer, right? Sawyer's in that?
That's the second one. Sawyer's on the second for a few paintballs more or whatever it's called. But
I watched Community, that one.
Community's known for these things. They did a kind of a parody of outer space movie somehow, if you can imagine that being set in a community college parking lot. They've done parodies of all sorts of crazy pop cultural things. So it was somewhat natural, I think, that they would do a Halloween episode. They had a couple Halloween episodes, but this one I think is straight up zombie movie parody, and I think done really well.
Yeah. It's narrated by George Takei, who's great. I always love as much George Takei as you can get in there. And then, you know, it's set in sort of like a, you know, it really toes the line in Community of having sort of like a, you know, a fantasy element, but it's sort of grounded in reality. And sort of the concept is that the dean ends up getting taco meat from an army surplus store, which has had sort of like a military experiment gone wrong and ends up turning everybody into zombies. It's sort of a cheap conceit that they end up at the end. It's just like, oh, you turn the air conditioning up and they all go back to regular people. So it's not like they didn't die and become zombies, even though it's being transmitted via bite. So that's how everybody ends up coming back. But it is very fun as they start to notice people end up being the issues that they're having, where Troy and Abed have this thing going on with, Troy wants to talk to girls at the party and doesn't want to just be nerd out with Abed, which is a very Troy and Abed thing to have going on. And there's a little bit of, a jealousy sort of love triangle between Annie and Jeff and this other guy who's a doctor. And then really it ends up being Troy is the sort of the hero of the episode.
Yeah, which they comment about, like Abed at one point says, "Be the black guy who survives and makes it to the end," which is, of course, a comment on all the movies where the African-American characters often die early and don't make it through the end of the piece. So Community is also one of the most meta shows on television, constantly commenting and remarking on other things or how situations that they're encountering are similar to TV or movies. So that's really funny. And yeah, it does a really nice mix of the absurd in the moment kind of things that are going on with the kind of classic community, heartfelt kind of stories, especially the Troy and Abed thing where Troy at one point in this episode even calls Abed a nerd, like in as a term of derision. And that Abed is really taken aback by that. Troy changes his costume from this sort of predator robot thing to what? He says he wants to be a sexy Dracula.
Sexy Dracula, yes.
He thinks vampires are called Draculas, I believe. And yeah, it doesn't look like a vampire at all. He just
he looks like a Roman paper soldier on his arms and like a
and he's got the word Dracula written across his bare chest. I really don't understand this costume.
Yeah. And then the episode sort of has its own sort of controversy, which ends up coming from the episode. So it's not just like one of these, like, you know, Treehouse of Horror type things. Like, it did not exist in the universe. Like, these events actually did happen because there is the thing between Chang and Shirley, which sets off its own, like, It's Always Sunny of, you know, who's the father of Shirley's baby, which goes on for quite some time.
This is it lasts Chang? For an entire season.
Yeah, is it Chang or Malcolm Jamal Warner?
Yeah, it's another Halloween-related whodunner.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I mean, that's two in one episode here, guys. Wow. I don't know. We've got to be careful with this.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is absolutely what happens in Community. And you're right, Rob. It becomes a bigger story. And it's a big moment for the Shirley character because this is truly her lowest point. I mean, she has a relationship with Malcolm Jamal Warner, her husband, Andre. He cheated on her when we first meet Shirley in the series.
Did he cheat on her or did he flirt with the idea of cheating on her?
There's a difference. There's a difference.
It's not a ski instructor thing. This was, I believe, a stripper thing. And yeah, that was no good, no bueno for Shirley and Andre.
These Cosby guys.
That's why Shirley goes to Greendale. She wants to kind of branch out and change her life. She's not happy. She's like the Cerie Fields just sitting on the couch. And she wants to do something different with her life. And Andre is a big part of that. And so this is really, truly her lowest point because Chang, no one wants to sleep with Chang. Like this is truly driven by adrenaline and we're going to die. And it's a very much a movie cliche kind of thing that happens. But Community is a great show because it does justice to Shirley in representing like this was truly a low point for her, and it's not something she can run from, and it's really interesting to see that. I forgot that happened in this episode, so to see it sort of placed there was very, very interesting. And the whole Jeff and Annie stuff is really weird because he's so much older than she is, and he's supposed to be in his mid-30s. She's supposed to be like 19. It's just a little awkward.
Yeah, it was good also seeing Chang before they've like really like lost the direction on that character. And I know that you stayed with Community the whole way through, Antonio, and so I don't want to disparage it, but I really felt like, you know, they really were very much like it was. Really, really great at that point in time, and I do feel like they lost it a little bit.
Yeah, Community is very uneven throughout its run. I mean, season 4 doesn't even have Dan Harmon as a showrunner. Mm-hmm. Dan Harmon then came back for season 5 and referred to season 4 as the gas leak season. The character said there was just a gas leak at Greendale, so everything that happened, their actions could be explained by, oh, there was a gas leak. So they didn't really mean that. And so it is really uneven. And you're right about one thing, like what to do with Chang. Like that was a major problem that the show never really figures out. There's good Chang, there's bad Chang. He's just completely cartoonish and ridiculous throughout a lot of the series, which there's not a lot of room for because the Dean is already that way. So it's tough. But this is good Chang. I mean, this is Chang just not really blowing up the proceedings, but also being totally a ridiculous kind of person and what he's doing. And this is a good use of Dr. Ken.
I also love the ABBA soundtrack that's playing through the episode. Also very, very fun.
Yeah, that's great. And I don't know why they decided to use basically almost exclusively ABBA songs in this, but it works really well, especially the Dancing Queen montage is really good.
Yeah, it's really good. It's a fun Halloween episode.
Dude, this is a fun Halloween episode. NBC on Thursday nights, when they had the Community and Parks and The Office, had kind of three shows that were really good at capturing, I think, what Halloween episodes on sitcoms should be and what they could be. The Office had some great ones as well. But my second pick is a Parks and Rec episode because Parks and Rec is my favorite sitcom. And it's the Greg Pakaitis episode. I saw it mentioned in the chat by Sam Schoaf, and I'm on board. Greg Pakaitis. Parks did a few Halloween episodes, but this is in Parks and Recreation's season 2, which was when Parks and Recreation really planted their flag about being a really funny show with a lot of potential in season two. You start meeting and getting to know some of the surrounding characters a lot better. And you find ways to use Leslie Knope that aren't obnoxious Leslie Knope. And this is a classic kind of example of that. Leslie Knope has a grudge against a local kid who has vandalized the parks department and the parks in the city repeatedly every Halloween. So this Halloween, she's going to go on a stakeout against this Greg Pakaitis with her then boyfriend, as played by Louis C.K., the sort of half-hearted, feeble-minded police officer, just kind of mumbling his way through and being really funny.
He's so good. He's great.
Yeah. And then you've got Chris Pratt, action movie superstar Chris Pratt, who at the time was not action movie superstar Chris Pratt, who was just kind of silly, big dumb dog Chris Pratt. And this is the first appearance of his character, Burt Macklin.
Yeah, this is the birth of Burt Macklin, right?
It's the birth of Burt Macklin, which is crazy because now he is the kind of guy that could play an FBI agent in a movie. Totally believable. But at the time, it was hilarious because he's the farthest from FBI agent as you can get. And so he's really funny in this episode when he tries to interrogate Greg Pakaitis when they've taken him into custody. So this is a really, really, a lot of people look back fondly on this episode of Parks and Rec. That said, I think it's not as fully formed and funny as some of their other later episodes.
Totally.
It doesn't really bring it in those ways. A lot of the characters don't have as many dimensions. We don't have Adam Scott and Rob Lowe on the show yet. We have Mark Brandanowitz played by, what is it, Paul Schneider, I think, or I forget what the guy's name is, but he is just not the same.
Rob Schneider.
Yeah, no, not Rob
Schneider.
It's really one of my favorite Parks and Rec episodes from that season. So, and it's a very memorable season of Parks.
I hadn't gone back and revisited early Parks and Rec. I've only watched Parks and Rec the one run through the show. It's not a show that I've gone back and revisited at all. But in my mind, Parks and Rec is so Ben Wyatt and Chris Traeger and onward, you know, the stuff before that almost doesn't exist to me. Before, you know, Brandanowitz barely exists. I only think of Brandanowitz. I don't remember him being on the show. And so going back and watching this, I hear what you're saying about it. It's not quite as fully formed as the show was later on. But this is a really funny episode. And some things that it's getting right are so, so funny. And I forgot that Louis C.K. was really so great on this show. And there is an alternate universe where he just stuck around and him and Leslie Knope were happily ever after. That was a really great pairing, those two.
Yes.
I love this episode. This is great. Greg Pakaitis is such a little piece of dirt, that kid.
Oh, he really is.
Did they ever bring back Greg Pakaitis in any other episode?
He has one more appearance on Parks and Rec, and I don't want to ruin it. But I will just say it's later in the run and throughout the run. People were constantly wondering, are we going to see Greg Pakaitis again? Because the showrunners and writers, the writers' room and the showrunners on this episode stayed pretty much the same throughout. They had some people kind of go off to other projects, but by and large, your core writers' room and your showrunners stayed the same, even though they went and launched Brooklyn Nine-Nine and a couple of other things. And so they knew their show really well, and they had always, I think, intended to bring Pakaitis back, and they bring him back kind of a really fun little cameo role in the later episode.
You know, they really have a great reveal with the, you know, it's like the whole thing is straight through that you feel like Leslie just has the wrong person and it's like making a fool out of herself. And then, you know, Greg Pakaitis' mom comes through. And then when they have that reveal, it's like, did he hire a fake mom again? Like, what?
Yeah.
Like, he goes on Craigslist and he pays a fake mom. And it's just like such a Kaiser Soze. Like, wait, what?
It was like the genius when the genius always reveals like there was some twist that happened earlier that you didn't see coming. There's like a great moment of, oh my god, that's how he did it, what he was doing all along.
Just sort of Ocean's 11, like, oh, there was a caper, here's how they pulled it off. Like, yeah, they do a really good job with that. They actually had a similar Halloween episode this past week on Brooklyn Nine-Nine, which has established, like, other great shows like Roseanne, for example, had great yearly Halloween episodes, and they were doing them kind of every year. The Connor family really did love Halloween. And they were doing pranks and all sorts of things. There's really great stuff there. And Brooklyn Nine-Nine, I feel like, has really kind of embraced, let's do a really good Halloween episode every year. And they have a similar conceit with like a heist every year. And they did a really fun kind of takeoff on this, wherein one of the characters actually looked a lot like Greg Pakaitis, wore the similar janitor uniform and did all that. And there's no doubt that there was some connection there because Dan Gore was one of the writers for Parks and Rec and is now the showrunner at Brooklyn Nine-Nine. So there's definitely, they're continuing that tradition of fun heist-related Halloween things. And yeah, Louis C.K. was just so funny on this show. This isn't even nearly his best episode as Dave the cop. The first time he meets Leslie and he has a kind of a talking head where he tries to articulate his feelings for her. And he stumbles his way through it. I would like to talk to her again. I find her fun to talk to. She's attractive. I'm attracted to the way that she looks. He just kind of stumbles his way through it. And it's so funny. It's if you haven't gone back and revisited kind of early Parks and Rec, if you're bored, it's on Netflix. Very much well worth it. Not the first
I even like season, what, I like when he comes back and has to compete with Ben Wyatt. I think it's good.
Also really funny. Yeah, also really funny. And because he's not like the most hostile guy, but he's clearly very upset about Ben Wyatt being around. And how that plays out is really funny. That Parks did some other Halloween type stuff. There is another really funny episode where Ron is in a relationship and has to be involved in the trick or treat. And if you can imagine Ron Swanson having to kind of lead a bunch of kids around through trick or treat and how that all plays out. That's actually a really funny kind of ripe thing for comedy that plays out there.
Frankly, I was surprised that I hadn't remembered this episode. So I forgot that he was, you know, in the spirit of the holiday enough to dress up like a pirate.
He has one costume. He rewears that pirate costume multiple times throughout the run of Parks. He says, this is my Halloween costume. Like, that's what he says. Like, he's like, this is the one that I have and that's it. I don't ever wear another Halloween costume. So that's the perfect Ron Swanson deal. Yeah, for sure.
So what's the key? We've talked about a lot of comedies. Is there anything that we could take away from all these shows that we watch for making a successful Halloween show for Halloween if you're a comedy?
Yeah, I think so. I think you have to be a really good comedy to begin with. And then you have to know your show so well enough that you know how Halloween works within your show's universe. I think that the Always Sunny Halloween episode is so perfectly Always Sunny. I think you could say the same about Larry David's approach to Halloween. He wouldn't make a big fuss out of it. I think Parks and Rec is appropriately light and, you know, filled with levity. I think you just have to know your show to begin with, and then the rest falls into place pretty easy. I think if you're trying to make a great, great Halloween episode, I feel like that's a harder thing to accomplish. I think you just got to know yourself.
Yeah, I think that's right. Cheers has some really great Halloween episodes that don't necessarily have to take place on Halloween. They engage in a prank war with Gary at Gary's bar that goes throughout the run of Cheers. I think there's maybe five or six of these bar wars episodes. And one of them takes place on Halloween. And it isn't so much about Halloween as a statement about Halloween. It's, okay, if this were happening on Halloween, how would these characters react? What would Fraser Crane want to do for Halloween? What about Lilith, his you know, just button-down wife? How would that play out? What about, you know, what would Cliff Clavin say about Halloween? So you're right, it's about knowing these characters and knowing their shows. And then once you do, you can really take almost anything and put it in the Halloween context and see how it plays out. And that's, I think, where other shows really maybe hit or miss if they just try to do a Halloween show and they just make fun of the holiday or they don't really have their characters kind of situated properly with response to it. It's not nearly as good.
Antonio, can you channel the people that are going to be posting comments on postshowrecaps.com that are yelling at us that we didn't talk about blank?
Yeah, I mean, you kind of mentioned it. We mentioned it a little bit at the beginning. The Simpsons is kind of the king of Halloween television, but they do these episodes where they are kind of not canon. Like they're just something that occurs in these small storylines. I mean, they famously have the characters come out in a couple of these Treehouse of Horror episodes before the episode and give a stand-up where they say, like, these are just stories. This isn't something that's going to change the series. These are just the characters telling these stories or little Halloween snippets. Don't, you know, they're scary. There's going to be gorier than a regular episode. They're special episodes. And a lot of things have done, like, special episodes like that. What's really interesting about that is The Simpsons this week or 2 weeks ago did a standalone episode that just took place on Halloween. It was a full, not multiple. They did it. They subsequently did a Treehouse of Horrors, but this one was just a Halloween episode. And if you haven't checked that out, anybody who's ever watched The Simpsons or been a fan, it's worth looking for that episode because it's also a really good episode of The Simpsons. And it's interesting. I don't know. I've seen some comments here in the chat about How I Met Your Mother, Mom or Rob. I don't know. Are you big on the Him Yim Halloween episodes?
You know what? Honestly, I can't remember them. Much like Josh with the Parks and Recreation, I've seen all of How I Met Your Mother, and especially the last couple seasons are a little fuzzy. I probably didn't see every episode down the stretch of like seasons like 7, 8, 9. I do remember, I can envision Ted on the roof and Halloween parties and stuff like that, but I can't say that they stand out really as like tattooed in my mind of How I Met Your Mother thanks Halloween. How about you, Antonio?
Yeah, I'm not the biggest fan, but I know that they're the episode's called Slutty Pumpkin, and the second Slutty Pumpkin episode, where I believe one of them, it might have been Barney, had met some woman dressed as like what he described as a slutty pumpkin at a party long ago, and then was trying to find her again at a subsequent party, and that's kind of the crux of it. But I think people really like that. Obviously, the Peanuts Halloween special, when we were talking about kind of generating this show, that's one of my all-time favorites. Again, those were TV specials. I mean, they were animated specials that took a lot of work and effort to make, and those are true works of art. And there wasn't, you know, they weren't episodes of a weekly sitcom or TV show that were airing that played out. So I don't know. I also really like the, I don't know if anyone will say it, but Freaks and Geeks has a really good Halloween episode that
yes.
I like a lot as well.
Yeah. Is that where I'm the bionic lady?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, it's really good.
Megan
yeah.
in the chat room is saying Home Improvement.
Home Improvement.
You remember the Home Improvement Halloween episode?
I don't. I'm a big JTT fan, but I don't recall off the top of my head.
I remember they had a lot of fun with Home Improvement, with Halloween on Home Improvement, the Taylor house. I think they all really got into it, but none of those episodes stuck out to me specifically as, you know, some of these other episodes do, but it, you know, a lot of sitcoms really, really have fun with Halloween when they do them, kind of embrace it. Like I said, Roseanne is probably one of the most notable because they had so many episodes about Halloween, and it looks like Brooklyn Nine-Nine is heading down that same track. Cheers has some great ones. I actually, not just sitcom, but, you know, my favorite show to watch around Halloween is Twilight Zone. I love the Twilight Zone. I'll watch it any time of the year. Anytime it's on, anytime anyone wants to.
Do they have a good Halloween episode?
They don't really have a good Halloween episode. They have an episode that aired right around Halloween. It's called The Grave. And it's a story about this cowboy who's afraid to go to a gravesite of his rival who's been killed in a shootout in the street. And it's, you can imagine how that all plays out in Twilight Zone. That was aired right at Halloween. It's probably one of their more classic Halloween episodes, but they don't really have a take on Halloween itself. But I mean, that's a show that's about horror and science fiction and kind of scary and spooky stuff. So everything in it is kind of Halloween friendly. Same with the Alfred Hitchcock Presents TV show, which I also really like.
All right. Anything else on Halloween comedy?
No, I think we hit it. Good stuff. This made me laugh a lot. This is the best Halloween's Eve I've ever had.
Wow.
Ever.
Josh,
here's to you guys.
What are we doing next week?
What are we doing next week? Well, it's not going to be Halloween anymore, but we'll be talking about a show that is premiering on Halloween, which is tomorrow if you're watching this live. So we will be sticking with horror, and we will be sticking with something that's pretty funny, I think. We're going to talk about Ash versus Evil Dead next week. It's premiering tomorrow night on Stars, on Halloween night on Stars. We are hopefully going to get Kurt Clark, the Tabulator, in the chat room talking about it with us as well next week. He is a big fan of the Evil Dead movies. I don't know what you guys feel about Evil Dead, Antonio or Rob. I think that you'll probably, if you don't know those movies very well, I'm very excited to get your take on it. If you're fans of the movies, I think it's going to be really fun. But I love Evil Dead, and I have been waiting for this show for a long time. I think we're going to have a really fun time talking about it next week.
I shop smart, Josh. I shop
yes.
smart. I'm a fan.
Yes, smart.
I'm a fan. I'll be surprised if Rob is. We'll see how this plays out.
Yeah. Well, I do have a story about myself and the Evil Dead, which I will get into next week. But no, I am not a big fan of that universe or have a lot of exposure to it. But looking forward to watching the show.
Bring your boomstick.
And talking about it. All right. Antonio, is the hashtag whodunner?
I don't know about that.
We had a suggestion for a drive-by egging.
Sure.
I don't know about that.
I'm like fine with the hashtag. I just don't actually do it. That's why I'm not going to leave my house after the sun goes down. That's good.
Well, I can't believe you were selected of all people. I mean, you were with Fair Play, Rob.
I'm
clearly,
such an
they
easy
wanted
mark
to hit him.
Because people aren't like, oh, let's hit that guy. He's not going to come and kick our ass. He's not packing heat, that guy.
But hell of a fantastic aim to get you in the throat.
I mean, I don't think they were aiming at my throat. I think they were just going in my general vicinity. Like, they could have been aiming at my chest.
Shot.
Right. And just to like,
Yeah.
You needed a good lawyer at that time, Rob. We could have got you some money.
I know. But it was a hit and run.
Hit and run.
Get the license. Get that license plate. We'll pull the tapes. We'll pull the traffic tapes.
That's trying to breathe.
All these years later, he still doesn't know it was me.
Oh, my gosh. It was the dude.
Full Audrey, Josh. Don't go full Audrey.
All right. So good stuff this week. We'll be back to talk about Ash versus the Evil Dead next week on Most Shows Recapped with Antonio and Josh and even the Tabulator. Hey, you guys have any other podcasts you made this week?
Yes. I'll speak for Josh because he's hiding behind his
back. I came back.
He's skipping in-house the veto egging. Ceremony.
I'm back. Yeah,
he's really afraid of an in-house egging. I don't know what's going on, but yeah, we've been talking about some stuff here on post-show recaps, mainly The Leftovers and Fargo. Josh and I both have been podcasting about those, and Jeremiah Panhorse joins us for Fargo. But you guys have been talking about what everyone is talking about in the entire world right now, which is The Walking Dead, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We got a really good feedback show up also where we take your voicemails. I was going to ask how
the feedback show was this week. Yeah, because the feedback on this week's episode.
It's an all feedback show about the one thing that everybody's talking about.
Yeah,
of course.
The one thing which we won't spoil in case you're the one person who doesn't know what that is. But yep, that's the case. Walking Dead was huge this week. Everyone was talking about Walking Dead. Friendships were ending over The Walking Dead. Rob and I remain strong. We recorded a great feedback show, and we'll be back on Sunday, maybe late Sunday, maybe early Monday to talk about the next episode, Mets Dependent.
It's looking like we're going to be right on schedule on Sunday night at this point.
Well, we'll see. It's two games. You're fine right now.
You can get to Yordi Ventura tonight, Rob.
We'll see. Okay. We'll see. All these pitchers that the Reds couldn't keep on their roster have come back to bite me in the butt here.
Yeah, really sorry about that, Rob. Really sorry.
All right.
Yeah, that Walking Dead, and then this week, I don't know. I don't think it's going to generate less comments this week, so we'll see what happens.
We'll see.
We have an American Horror Story podcast with Fish back in the bank that's going to be coming out on Halloween Day, so look out for that tomorrow.
All right, nice. So good stuff. Looking forward to it. Looking forward to hearing your comments on postshowrecaps.com. Of course, you could follow us on Twitter. You could follow Antonio. He's at AC Mazzaro. That's
two Z's, one R.
That's, of course, Round Howard is Josh at Round Howard.
Like the dude, but rounder.
And I'm at Rob Cesternino. If you can't spell it, you can't follow me. And we will be back next week. Take care, everybody. Bye.